You're listening to Red Eye on Co-op Radio at CFRO 102.7 FM.
The BC and federal governments now say that the Vancouver Olympics bid has underestimated many costs of the Games, including venue construction and security. But the legacy of Olympic debt may be even higher than either government wants to admit. Michael Shapcott is an organizer with Bread Not Circuses, the coalition of anti-poverty activists that opposed Toronto's bid to host the Olympics. He's lobbied the International Olympic Committee on social and environmental issues and has worked with organizations critical of Olympic bids in more than 20 cities. Shapcott is a senior policy fellow of the Wellesley Institute. He joins me by phone now from his home in Toronto. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Jane.
Now, how will the IOC and the province of BC share the debt or the profits from the 2010 Olympics?
Well, actually, there's no mystery at all, Jane. Long before the IOC even made the decision to stick the Winter Games in Vancouver, the city of Vancouver had to sign an agreement with the International Olympic Committee in which 100% of the formal debt that is part of the Games will have to be assumed by Vancouver and ultimately by the taxpayers of the province of British Columbia. It's the exact same agreement that every city signs with the International Olympic Committee. In fact, it's a condition of bidding on the Games that the bidding city has to say, even before we know who's got the Games, we have to agree to take on 100% of the debt. So the IOC has imposed this condition, it's one that Vancouver certainly can't wriggle out of. I should also say, Jane, that you sort of qualified your question by saying debt or possibly surplus. There's never been a surplus in the history of the Games, and certainly in the modern history of the Games. There's always been whacking big debts. There are two kinds of debts. There are the formal debts from the operation of the Games, and then there's a whole bunch of financial debts that are associated with costs that aren't formally part of the Games budget, but nevertheless have been triggered by the Olympics.
So what kind of thing would that be?
Well, that would be like transportation infrastructure, other kinds of infrastructure that are needed to support the game, building of the venues. The Olympic venues, again, another dirty little secret the IOC doesn't like to talk about it. The International Olympic Committee won't allow the local bid committee to use revenues generated from the Games to actually pay for the construction cost of Olympic facilities, whether it's the housing, the sports facilities, or the media center or anything else that's associated with the Games. What they say is that these are long-term facilities. They're going to be around long after the Games are gone, so therefore the local bid committee has to figure out how to pay for it. And what they insert into the Olympic budget is a rental fee. So they sort of say, we're only going to use it for a few weeks during the Games, so we'll allow you to put a rental fee in there, but you're stuck with the full construction costs. That's one of the many financial measures that I'm sorry to say, as a proud Canadian, that it was actually another Canadian who invented the modern Olympics, the post-Los Angeles Olympics, where the IOC came up with the a bright idea after the Montreal Games, when there was it was a real financial disaster, and there was a real danger that cities around the world would say, we don't want to have the Olympics that cost too much. A fellow named Dick Pound, a former Canadian Olympic athlete who was sitting on the International Olympic Committee, came up with the bright idea of coming up with this complicated financing scheme, and which basically puts all the costs on and all the risks and all the debt onto the local communities and leaves the IOC to go back to Switzerland after the Games and not have to worry about a penny.
So the Montreal just finished paying off their debt after 30 years.
Hooray.
Congratulations to them. Are we looking at the same kind of rollout for our what debt that we're going to have here in Vancouver?
Well, it depends. And Calgary was another Olympic city, and what happened with Calgary was that despite the fact that Alberta is the sort of home of free enterprise government, and they want to have as small government as possible, the government in fact paid more than half the cost up front of the Calgary Games, and by government I mean primarily it was the municipal and provincial government, although the feds did kick in a lot of money as well. There wasn't, some people would argue, there wasn't that much of a debt because the taxpayers, rather than waiting till after the games and picking up the debt, just shoveled in all the money in advance. That's how Calgary was able to escape one of the big problems. But you know, if you're a poverty activist in the downtown East Side and you're looking at money being shoveled into the Olympic Games beforehand to cover the costs or afterwards to cover the debt, it doesn't really make a lot of difference. It's still money, public money, that's going in to support what is essentially a private sporting venture. That's money that could have been used elsewhere.
Now, people who support the Olympics say that we get in our city then projects that are constructed for the Olympics, construction, ice rinks, transportation systems. In Vancouver here, we have the RAV line out to the airport, and then we can use them later. Is that a valid argument?
There's no question the Olympics are... They've been referred to as economic steroids. They really pump up the local economy. But there's two things that people should be concerned about that. One is, are the economic and urban development initiatives that the Olympics trigger, are those the ones that people really want and need? Are those the ones that are going to help make Vancouver a strong, healthy, equitable city over the long run? Are they the subject of democratic processes? I don't know for sure. I have to say I haven't seen a lot of nonpartisan or independent opinion polls, but I do know in cities like Toronto, for instance, when people were polling to say consistently over the last 15, 20 years, what is the top priority for public spending, nobody ever mentions building a new sports stadium or the other facilities associated with the Olympics. While the Olympics do in fact generate that kind of an economic, short-term economic impact, the question is, are those the right projects to help make Vancouver a better city? But also what you have to realize is that after the Olympics, there's almost always an Olympic bust, and you can trace it to every city that's hosted the Olympics now. Obviously, Vancouver hosting a Winter Games, the economic, social, environmental impact of the Games, because they're a bit smaller than the Summer Games, are less than they are for the Summer Games. But nevertheless, you can look at city after city that's hosted either Winter or Summer Games, and what you see is, of course, all those economic steroids that pumped up the local economy, as soon as they're withdrawn, then the economy goes down. So as a long-term strategy to maintain sustainable jobs, to build a good city, it just simply doesn't make sense. And I guess one last thing I'd say around this, Jane, is that there are lots of ways to generate jobs in Vancouver. Investing money, for instance, in new child care centers creates lots of jobs, construction jobs, long-term jobs for people who are working in the child care sector. And if you take the same level of public investment that's going to be made in the Olympics, including all the debt that the public will have to assume when the games are over, and you were to put that into socially useful projects like affordable housing, schools, green jobs, those sorts of things, then you'd have at least as much economic impact in terms of good jobs, tax revenues, and all that sort of thing, and they'd likely be more sustainable, and they'd be the kind of things that would help the people of Vancouver much more than the temporary steroids of the Olympics.
I want to give you another argument that I hear from people in support of the Olympics, and that is that it'll put Vancouver on the map, and by Vancouver being put on the map, then it will generate tourism revenue for years to come.
Well, again, the scientific evidence, there actually are a group of academics around the world who study these things. They look at pre- and post-Olympic tourism statistics to find out if there really is, objectively, an Olympic impact. No one's been able to find that. There are lots of claims that are made. You know, certainly it is true that for the period of time, especially during a Summer Olympics Games, that the Olympics are a big TV spectacle. That's what they're all about. They're about generating a global TV audience in order to sell that audience to commercial sponsors. And so there's no doubt that some attention is shone on the city. But the question is, you know, will somebody who's watching Olympic snowboarding event in Australia say, you know, I'm going to fly to Vancouver? You know, much more likely are other things that Vancouver can do in terms of sustaining sustaining tourism and so on. I would also say that in light of the realities of the global economy, any city that puts its hope in terms of tourism as being a way, as a good economic strategy for the next 5 or 10 years, should be rethinking that very dramatically, because having the Olympics is not going to deal with the realities of the bust in the world economy and the consequent drop in tourism, which we've seen already happening before the Olympics.
Well, I was just going to ask you about that, the financial crisis, and how that might have an impact on the Games, aside from in tourism, but in other aspects of that crisis.
Well, I think it's going to have a couple of impacts. It's going to be a double whammy for, you know, the people of Vancouver and the people of British Columbia, with or without the Olympics, are heading into some very serious financial distress caused by the global economic crisis, in turn triggered by the actions in the United States. And that wasn't caused by the Olympics, and the Olympics aren't going to make any difference to that. It's coming. That's the freight train that's heading towards us. That's going to have some big costs in terms of both what some economists call the financial economy, but also it's going to have some costs in terms of the real economy. We're going to see governments, they're going to really have to start struggling with issues around loss of jobs, with you know, the housing crisis that already is severe in British Columbia and in Canada. 1 in 4 households are struggling to pay their housing costs, both ownership and rental households. All that's going to get worse. But then you guys, unfortunately, have to deal with a double whammy, because not only have you got that, but you're going to have to deal with the post-Olympic debt, the financial distress. So it's one financial disaster piled up on top of another financial disaster. It's going to give the government of British Columbia, the city of Vancouver, very little wiggle room in terms of strategies that it can adopt in terms of moving ahead. So, you know, far from you know, the short-term and temporary boost that the Olympics will provide to the local economy will in no way compensate for the big debt and the other financial issues and the inevitable downturn, post-Olympic downturn.
How is the debt typically managed when you're in that post-Olympic period? Does it result in higher taxes, or how does it work?
Well, we can look at Montreal, or we can look at Calgary, and see that there are a couple of ways that Olympic costs are managed in the Canadian context, and there's not really a lot of difference around the world. In Montreal, the way that the Olympics cost was dealt with was in basically two ways. One, they imposed a bunch of new taxes on people, so therefore people felt directly when they got their tax bills. And as you say, they were paying for it more than two decades after the fact. It was about $1 billion deficit, Montreal, which I'm sad to say nowadays doesn't sound like a lot of money, but in fact it was a huge debt back then. And so they raised taxes, and the other thing they did was they cut spending on vital programs. Montreal was notorious for years and years and years dumping sewage directly into the St. Lawrence River. And when you asked Mayor Drapeau and his successor mayors, why are you doing this, which is, you know, environmental catastrophe? And he said, we can't afford to build a sewage treatment plant, and because they're paying off the Olympic debt. Calgary and Alberta, of course, is notorious for being a province which, especially under the former premier, Ralph Klein, absolutely cut to the bone essential government services, whether it was spending on health care, spending on education, spending on housing. So the way that in Alberta that they covered off the cost of the Olympics was just simply by cutting spending on all other, a lot of other very important government initiatives. So for Vancouver and for the province of British Columbia, there's really only two toolkits, two items they have in their financial toolkit to deal with the post-Olympic costs. One is they can raise taxes, and the other is they can cut spending on other programs. And I suspect it'll be a combination of the two.
At this point, we're just over a year away now. Is there anything that activists in British Columbia can do to lobby for a more fiscally responsible Olympics and to try to minimize the financial impact of the Games?
Well, there's a couple of things that could be done. First of all, well, Vancouver and British Columbia are going to be the big losers financially on the Olympics. One of the big winners is the International Olympic Committee. The Games do, in fact, generate a significant amount of money, not enough to actually cover all of the costs, direct operating costs and associated costs, but they do generate a lot of money. There's a very strict formula also mandated by the IOC that Vancouver has no choice but to accept, which says that about half, I think, or slightly more than half, I've now forgotten the exact amount, but it's a big whack if it goes directly back to Switzerland, to the International Olympic Committee, and Vancouver and British Columbia aren't allowed to touch that money. So I think that it would be very useful and very interesting to say to the IOC, look, you guys have got to be a bit more responsible with this. You've got to recognize the realities of the huge costs associated with staging these games and the huge impact that's going to have financially, socially, environmentally on Vancouver and the surrounding area. And you've got to create something like a social development fund, for instance, to help mitigate some of these costs, to help ease through the post-Olympic economic downturn, deflation that'll happen. That's not a new idea. It's an idea that anti-Olympic activists have actually been taking the IOC and in fact, very senior people in the United Nations and other global authorities have also taken to the IOC and basically said, could you guys share a little bit more of the money that you're generating out of these games, the fantastic amount of money? And unfortunately, it's always met with a dull silence. I once spoke directly with Dick Pound, who I mentioned as the architect of the modern Olympic financial system, about this, and he referred to me as a bottom feeder and said all I wanted to do was to get my hands on the Olympic money. And I said, well, you're half right. I do want to get my hands on Olympic money, but it's not for personal enrichment. It's to try and benefit the communities and avoid some of the huge costs that communities are forced to bear.
Thanks so much for joining our show this morning. It's been great to have your perspective on it.
Thank you, Jane.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
I've been speaking with Michael Shapcott. He's founder of the Bread Not Circuses Coalition, and he's a senior policy fellow at the Wellesley Institute in Toronto.